This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're talking about self-awareness, the good and the bad, and I wanted to add the ugly as well. So, you know, this is one of those topics that doesn't think about every day, right? And we've heard of the concept of self-awareness, but who popularized it? Who got us thinking about it?
Yes, good morning, Frida, and really thanks for having me again. And yes, truth be told, it's not something that everyone thinks of every day. So back to your question, historically, the psychological study of self-awareness actually came about in the early 1970s, I think 1972. Psychologists Shelley Duvall and Robert Wicklund, they developed the theory of self-awareness, and they proposed that when we focus our attention on ourselves, we tend to evaluate and compare ourselves to some form of internal standards and values. You know, we become a bit more self-conscious, we become more objective evaluators of ourselves, and they've also proposed that it leads to some form of self-control. And I think things have changed, right? Mm. In the 1990s, psychologist Daniel Goleman, he's a very popular author of the book Emotional Intelligence. A lot of people have probably read that book, and he defined it somewhat the same. And he says that it's knowing one's internal states, preferences. I think he says also resources and intuitions. So you can see they are very internal and inward looking at ourselves.
All right. Yeah. Now, okay. So this self-awareness, mm-hmm. is it actually only about how we see ourselves?
Thank you so much for bringing this up. And I believe that self-awareness has come a long way, all right? So recent studies, one I find most interesting is by organizational psychologist Tasha Urich. She's actually made quite a name for herself in recent years on this topic. She defines it slightly differently, actually. And she's looking at it from two broad perspectives or categories, actually. One is your internal self-awareness and the other one is your external self-awareness.
Okay.
Yeah. And really, she says that internal self-awareness really looks at seeing really about ourselves, how clearly we see ourselves, our values, our passions, your motivations, really, how you think, feel, react, your behaviors, even your strengths and your weaknesses. And of course, the external one is understanding how other people view you. Yeah. And these are people, and these are about the same factors that I mentioned about mm-hmm. the internal one, you know. So this is really about knowing the closest people in your circle, your external environment, your friends, your peers, your family, your bosses, and really how they perceive you. So I find this one to be a bit more true because you can't be only inward looking, really. You need to really understand how others see you as well.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
so this is interesting. So the inward looking one, you know, something I'm aware of, mm-hmm. but the outward looking one. Mm-hmm. But I feel that I'm sure we'll get to it, that you have to be congruent, though.
That's true.
In and out.
That's true. You
right? Because otherwise, it's a very difficult life to live.
Yes.
That I have to be one person,
yes.
You know, in one way, another person another way,
yes,
as well.
Yes, yes.
Now, so again, why then is both internal and external self-awareness so important?
So, you know, really self-awareness is, and developing it is being more comfortable in your own skin with yourself. Let's say looking internally, right? Mm. It really helps pinpoint your passions, your emotions, how your personality brings you somewhere. It kind of helps you recognize your own thoughts and your feelings. Because once you really know that, you can make changes. You can take steps to improve, should you want to, of course, and craft a new path for your life, you know. And, you know, research has also shown that people who are very internally self-aware have reported to have higher job and relationship satisfaction. They are more in control of themselves.
Mm.
And it's been negatively related to anxiety, stress and depression.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, if you look at externally, yeah, you know, people who really know how others see them, yeah,
mm.
They're more skilled at showing empathy. Yeah, they're and then they also take feedback much better as well. They're more open to different perspective. And for these, you know, if you're looking at a leader, right, leaders who see themselves as their employees do, they tend to have better working relationships with them. They're more satisfied and they become all more well-rounded, more effective leaders. Yeah.
Okay. Also, you know, when I look at it as well, when I look at internal self-awareness mm-hmm. for myself, because it's so easy to blame people for
that's
anything
right.
that's wrong and all
that's
that,
right?
And you
that's
know that right. you can't change the areas beyond control.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
only thing that you can control is really yourself.
That's right.
Right.
That's
so then right. how do I look at it? No, if I get angry or if I get angry, yeah. why am I angry?
Yes.
Right.
Well,
you mm-hmm. know, that self-questioning thing. And then yes. if you see certain patterns happening, why is it constantly happening?
Yeah.
Or even if you're happy, why are you happy?
Right?
Right. And understanding then what is it that drives you, right?
Correct.
And you don't want to, you know, so that's a very interesting thing, right?
Yes.
Now,
that's right.
And of course, so self-awareness definitely many benefits. So you mentioned earlier though, not everyone thinks about it though, and it's not very common.
Yeah. You know, thanks for sharing your thoughts. Yes, I always thought it was very common, yeah. But surprisingly, not as much, you know. So a lot of the studies have brought this up where people feel that they are really self-aware. And Tasha Urich's study actually found that it was a very rare quality. Out of the people that she studied, only 10 to 15% of people fit that criteria,
right.
you know. And it's really interesting because they nicknamed these people self-aware unicorns. So this unicorn word, you know, is a buzzword. It's really
yeah.
interesting. And honestly, Frida, truth be told, it's not so hard to believe. And the most obvious answer really is we're not always there. We're not always present to observe these things about ourselves. We are not paying full attention to what goes on inside or around us. And it's just not a habit sometimes, yeah? It takes time, it takes patience, and the world moves really fast nowadays. Not everybody can take that. In fact, psychologists Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Gilbert, they highlighted that actually almost half of us operate on an autopilot frame. You know, we're really unconscious of what happens around us. You know, example, driving to work, it's
yeah.
just an autopilot thing. I don't think too much unless I'm really going to a new place. Go to work, it's the same routine. So, you know, it's really, that's the minor thing that I would like to highlight.
Yeah.
And of course, looking at the external side of things, we may sometimes lack the willingness to take feedback.
Hmm.
You know, this feedback, and that could really work against us sometimes, you know. And I haven't even touched on things like cognitive biases. I won't talk about it too much, but all this cumulated really affect our ability to see ourselves more accurately
right.
and understand ourselves.
What's cognitive yeah. biases though?
Yeah, I mean, you know, things that have been set in motion before, things that you have been through, you have a cognitive bias against it.
Mm.
You know, how you've done certain things and you feel that it's always the right way.
Right?
It's always been done this way. It's worked for me forever.
Right. We tried it before, it didn't
correct.
Work.
Correct. So
okay.
And there's a lot of cognitive biases, so I won't go into detail too much. But yes, it really has worked.
So obviously being very self-aware, mm-hmm. both internally and externally, is good, right?
You would think so, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I mentioned so many good things, really. But I really want to highlight this part. There are some downsides of being too self-aware.
As well.
Yes.
Okay.
And the key is really not knowing what to do about it. You know, like I said, so many things happen now day to day. A lot of things, there's so much data that gets dumped on us. And for this, allow me some time to move into some of the subtopics on introspection and rumination.
Okay.
They are both linked to self-awareness, yeah? So for the listeners out there, introspection is really about examining some of the causes of our own thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors.
What
you
I
know.
Mentioned earlier.
Yes,
okay.
correct.
Right.
Exactly what you mentioned earlier, because really, what better way to know ourselves reflecting on why we are the way we are, right?
Mm.
Yet, one of the most surprising findings is that people who introspect too much are have been shown to be less self-aware and report some worse job satisfaction and well-being. Huh. You know, it's really interesting, well, actually.
Okay, this is why I want to know why. You know, but when you say introspection and rumination, I'm thinking of the meditation time.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Anyway, why is that? Why is that though? You know, when you say that there's a when the
being too introspective. Yeah,
yeah?
And I really wanted to highlight this because it's not that introspection is bad. Yeah, you know, it's just usually done wrong. It is done the wrong way.
Okay.
So let's look at, arguably the most common introspective question. Why? W-H-Y, you know? You mentioned it a few times actually in the part, you know, why do I do this? Why do I do that? And we ask that question a lot when we're trying to understand our emotions, you know, our behaviors, our attitudes. Example, why did I lose my temper so fast? Mm. Why do I prefer employee A over employee B? Why was I against this particular project? Why was my mind set against something else?
Okay.
And it turns out why is surprisingly quite an ineffective self-awareness or introspective question.
Oh, wrong question.
Yeah,
okay,
it could be the wrong question.
Okay.
Yes, because, you know, asking why tends to lead to sometimes some negative consequences, especially when you're really trying to explain an undesired outcome.
Mm.
You know, it can invite negative thoughts, and this then leads to some what we would call ruminative patterns. Yeah. And actually, the late Yale psychology professor Susan Nolan Hoeksema, I hope I got her name right, she says, really puts it really nicely. She says that rumination is repeatedly and passively thinking about a problem, a consequence of that, and not really moving forward. You know, you're not, you're thinking and thinking, but you're not really moving forward with it. You know, example, why can't I stop eating too much? Or why am I fat today? And instead of taking the step to, hey, make a salad for lunch or make something from home, you know, take something from home. So that's the kind of things that people tend to do. Yeah. And it doesn't also help that, let's say you ask for feedback and you ruminate about that feedback. Could be really feedback that was maybe given wrongly or was a bit too critical for your liking.
Right.
You know, and you think like, oh no, why?
Or maybe
why?
There were 10 compliments and one criticism and you only look at the one.
Exactly. And you're the kind that zooms into one negative comment and so you think and think and think. And it's really not the best way. So again, I've had some experience with this in my working life. When I started in the corporate world, I was told I had to do a lot more of a public speaking, client engagement work. It didn't help that I knew for a fact that I never was comfortable doing it. I was very awkward. I mumbled, I stumbled a lot. And people gave me feedback, you know, so bosses or mentors or peers really did say that, hey, you don't really like doing it, do you? You don't, you know, your face showed that you were so stressed at the beginning. And truth be told, yeah, I still do that, you know. I still get sometimes feedback. However, back then, I didn't know any better, right? So when I get these things, I ponder too much. I ruminate, right? I go and say, why did I not perform as well as I should have, because I did do so much. I really put so much effort. I spent hours preparing for this. And why did other people do it better? You know, they didn't. You know, I just kept, oh my gosh, I cannot believe she could do it better. I didn't. She feels so much more comfortable. So I kept asking myself, why, and why did I make that mistake? And then at the end of the day, I really realized that it didn't lead anywhere. It just kept... It just became something that made me feel really stuck, right?
Okay.
Ruminations about being stuck and you're not getting anywhere. You self-question too much till you feel a little helpless.
Okay.
You feel really helpless and it happens. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners, I think they can relate to that. It's not an uncommon thing. So I just really wanted to highlight this portion because that's the bad thing, right? It tends to lead to some negative consequences. And if not addressed early, it can lead to, you know, diminishing self-confidence. You know? So I felt that before, and that's why I wanted to share this.
Okay. Yeah. I know I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but maybe the question you could ask is, what are the three things I can do better? Right? And that sort of gets you on a positive note. But we'll talk about the right way to introspect that leads to greater self-awareness in just a moment. I'm here with Sarah Kang from Leadonomics. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Bright, formidable media. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to Race Again. Good morning, Frida Liu here. I'm speaking to Sarah Kang from Leadonomics, talking about self-awareness, the good and the bad, and also the ugly, which I've added. Very interesting. You know, we think self-awareness is good, but it also has its negative sides, right? Mm-hmm. There's introspection, and then there's rumination, and the rumination could actually get us on a downward spiral, right? Mm-hmm. Now, is there then a right way to be introspective that leads to greater self-awareness? And also, what else can we do to increase both internal and external self-awareness?
Frida. So there are definitely a few ways. Some have worked for me. Some have worked for my people that I've interacted with as well. So back to that first question on the rumination. I will go back to that rumination example where you're asking why too much. Yeah, it just becomes a habit of asking why too much and not getting anywhere. So my first suggestion is instead of asking why, ask what. So what... it really helps to frame your mind to be a bit more solution-focused, you know. So what are the steps I need to take to get out of this particular problem? So if I explain back to my example of how I overcome some of the
fears of public speaking,
you know, it was really then, after a time when I felt, okay, this is not getting me anywhere, I need to change the way I think. So asking what was quite interesting. So when I asked that question, it became that there are things I can actually do. I actually got support from a close mentor to record me. Yeah, to record me and give me feedback on the spot.
So the question became, what can I do to improve?
Yes, what can I do to improve?
Okay.
You know, yeah, you know why, and you know you'll never always be comfortable, but what could I really do? So I felt when I did that, I could frame some solutions to improve, you know, my mentor gave some good feedback. Then I watched simple things, TED Talks. I got friends to actually give me some good feedback as well. And you see, when I did that, it wouldn't have solved my problem straight away.
Right.
It didn't stop it straight away, but it made me feel that, okay, yes, I'm doing something about it. I'm not just sitting down and...
Right, and you're moving forward.
I am, yeah. And again, right, when I mentioned earlier on about asking why is the wrong way, I just want to just go back a little bit and say that, remember, why is not... It's not that we shouldn't ask why at all. Because case in point, if you've had a business deal that didn't go the way you wanted it to... you can't just say, okay, what can we do better now? So you just move forward and trudge forward. So asking a first level of why then is important. You know, you ask, why did we not win the deal? Is it because the price wasn't right? Did we not address the needs of the client? So once you get that first level, then you ask the what, and the what then brings you forward. So again, when you catch yourself, don't go too deep into the why. Asking why the first level, then go what, and then move forward with that. You know, so that was really the thing that I really wanted to highlight, asking what, these questions.
So like, for example, I just want to add on from there. I just like, you know, I always put like, what are three things I can do?
Because
sometimes more than that also can be overwhelming. So if I know that there are three things I can do to improve by a book, to learn about presentation skills, get feedback, then when I've done the three, I feel like I've achieved something.
That's right.
You know, so as opposed to when you say what, there are like probably a million things you can do to improve. But I say three,
three now, doable.
Yeah, right.
Achievable.
Three more.
That's right. Yes, you're very right. That's a good frame of mind, Frida.
Okay.
You know, so that's the one, the three, the what is the important one, yeah? Secondly, again, is to invite some form of feedback. You know, be open to different perspectives because it's easier said than done. I know it's easier said than done. We're not a culture that always... asks for feedback or even offer feedback, right. you know, unless you've been brought up in a certain way. But truth be told, not everybody enjoys it. Not everybody wants to be told that they're not.
And not a lot of people are very good at giving it to. That's the
true.
That's the challenge.
It's true. It's right? true. You know, because people don't know the best way. Remember, when you give feedback, you need to be objective about it, and also be it has to be useful,
yeah.
not just say you're bad. And then they stop there, and then the person just feels, okay, I'm just bad.
Right.
Which is really, which is not
to,
a good thing.
To look at the behavior, not the person, right? I've heard of certain formulas like the sandwich, that kind of thing. Lots of different formulas.
Good, bad, good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, firstly, you know, when you look at feedback, then as an individual, maybe you would want to highlight a few people that you trust, you know, people that are close to you, that you know will give you the right kind of feedback, the feedback that is useful and moves forward. So you highlight maybe a good mentor, a good boss, a very close friend, or even a family member. You know that they'll give you honest and objective perspectives. And remind them that when they give this feedback to you, it's not to hurt you. You know, it's not to make you feel worse about yourself. It's really about highlighting these areas so that you can improve and not repeat them, you know. And of course, in the work context, I'm sure some of you have heard about this 360 feedbacks, right? They are a bit more, they're a bit more structured, and they're supposed to be a bit more a platform for people to be anonymous sometimes, because not everybody is very comfortable with giving feedback, right? What you rightly mentioned. So a 360 feedback, when done correctly, helps to highlight a person's blind spots because it looks at your manager, yourself, your subordinates and your peers. So these areas, if certain areas you may not have realized that you don't come off across, you may come across differently.
And you know
there's
something wrong if all your peers, everybody says you're good except your supervisor.
That's true.
Then you'll find out,
maybe I didn't realize that, or maybe I wasn't showing that side of myself to my supervisor. So it's really a blind spot sometimes.
Right.
And of course, when the feedback is finished, please don't just sit on it, you know, take some steps, you know, ask the what again. You may ask the why and say, oh yeah, I didn't realize this, but okay, what can I now do about it? Top three things, yeah? And something that I found really useful in the last few years actually is asking for on-the-spot feedback.
Okay.
I don't actually wait for a 360 sometimes.
Right.
Things move too fast. Case in point, if I go for a meeting and I realized, I asked my boss straight after, hey, what was your thoughts on how I presented? Could I have done anything better? And one thing that's another manager highlighted to me before was, I didn't realize this. She highlighted that, hey, you know, when you went into this meeting, you were really good. However, you kept saying this sentence in a not the best way to the client. Because she knew me. She knew that this is how I am and this is how I talk on a day-to-day. But the way it came off to the client wasn't as convincing.
Right.
So for her to highlight that, and she said, you know, all you need to do was switch it around. And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't realize it. It was such a blind spot. No one has told me this before. And that helped me. So every time I go into a very important meeting now, I have to tell myself, okay, remember, this was one comment. Try to work on it. Try to catch yourself before you say it and practice before that.
And it's very important, like you say, on the spot, because you remember it then and there. You tell me a week later, did I do that?
Yeah, I know. Right? So it's true. And it's helping. It helps the feedback provider as well. They don't remember everything. To be fair, you're not the only person in their life. So they also need to let it out faster as well. So actually, it's quite good. It takes 10 minutes. Not that long,
right.
You know? So on-the-spot feedback, one great way. And lastly, consider journaling. Yeah. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but, you know, journaling really helps us process some of our thoughts and make us feel a bit more connected. You know, I know you're putting things onto paper, or it can be, you don't have to put on paper. Nowadays, you can type it out also if you really need it to. Consider, you know, taking an hour, maybe an hour or two, if you could, on a weekend, say, when you're not too busy with the day-to-day happenings, and putting some thought into putting it onto paper, you know, what happened throughout the week, something important that happened or some feedback that you got, you'll be really surprised at what can really come out of it. And when you do that, it's a form of mindfulness in a way. You know, you're paying attention to, in a particular way, you're being present on purpose. Mm. Remember we mentioned in the beginning, we are autopilot all the time, right? So it's really good to sometimes just be conscious of this, and when you're there, you're just a bit more non-judgmental. You're just letting it flow onto paper. I've had friends who gave me some good feedback on this. They said that, yeah, we don't do it every day. It's too tiring to be present all the time, but it's helped them put into perspective something that happened throughout the week. And that's a great learning for yourself. Right? Yeah, I recommend that, you know. And of course, I mentioned a few key areas, right? Three things to do, but it's really important that people don't assume that doing this all three tomorrow means you are automatically self-aware. It really does take time. It takes, and it's really a time project. You know, through your whole life, you're always going to find something new about yourself.
About yourself, right? It's like an onion, slowly peeling them. Yeah? Final takeaway for this, Sarah?
Yeah. So really, really, with self-awareness, right, yeah, when you practice it correctly, there needs to be some form of self-acceptance, really. You know, people will always listen to this and say that, oh no, they start to question again, am I really not as self-aware as I thought I was? And my suggestion is really, really to be kind to yourself, you know. The road to self-discovery really does take a while, like I mentioned, and you need to remember that you're not perfect and no one ever is. We are always, always a work in progress, an onion that keeps on peeling, you know. And of course, just remember to ask what instead of why. Consider getting some genuine feedback and, yeah, consider some journaling.
All right. So love the skin you're in.
Yes, love the skin you're in.
And it's really interesting to do this, especially, you know, as you're setting your goals. So 2019,
end of the year.
Right? So
2 weeks
ago. Something, so, you know, doing your journaling.
That's right.
And thinking how great the year has been, or how areas to improve for 2019.
Of course.
So self-awareness, the good and the bad. Speaking to Sarah Kang from Leadernomics, this is Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.